It's time for the SwampSwamiSports.com audio podcast. Let's reimagine the big dance. Do we want more pound puppies or pedigrees? As we enter the last week of February, college basketball fans are dreaming and scheming about how their favorite team might receive an invitation to the March Madness College Basketball Tournament. The men's and women's college basketball teams are clamoring for the favor of ESPN's renowned March Madness prognosticator, Joe Lunardi. The term bracketology is a combination of art and science in trying to determine the most likely teams to make the championship field. This past weekend, the cold and wet weather down here in the swamp had me watching several exceptional college basketball games on television. On Saturday, I had my first chance to watch men's number 1 Auburn, number 2 Florida, and number 3 Alabama all play on television in different games. If number 1 Auburn happened to have number 3 Alabama's talented point guard Malik Sears, Auburn would probably be the men's champion coming up this year. The Auburn Tigers are now 25-2, and they allowed pesky Georgia, though, to hang around with them far too long at home in Saturday afternoon's 82-70 victory. Meanwhile, at number 3 Alabama had Auburn's exceptional big man by the name of Jonai Broome, the Crimson Tide might be a shoe-in for the title, too. Alabama is now 22-5, and they finally pulled away to take down number 17 Kentucky 96-83 in Tuscaloosa Saturday evening. And then there's number 2 Florida, which really struggled at LSU on Saturday night. Behind by 6 points at the half, the Gators finally awakened and put on a clinic during the game's last 10 minutes to take down the Tigers 79-65. That game was much closer than the final score indicated. Like perennial power University of Houston, the Florida Gators have a very balanced attack which plays solid defense. Saturday night's shooting woes, though, at LSU, which is a mediocre 14-13 team right now, showed future opponents a glimpse of the Gators' green kryptonite if their offense happens to falter. And shades of Pistol Pete, congratulations to the North Carolina State women's basketball team. The Wolfpack's women's basketball team took down the former number 1 team Notre Dame 104-95 in double overtime on Sunday afternoon. NC State, which is now 22-5 and 14-2 in the ACC, likely guaranteed themselves a spot in the upcoming March Madness field with that win. The Fighting Irish, which is now 24-3 and 15-1 in the ACC, had a 19-game winning streak come to an end in this back-and-forth game Sunday afternoon in Raleigh, North Carolina. In what was probably the best individual play I saw all weekend, NC State's guard Isaiah James grabbed a defensive rebound in that second overtime period and started dribbling down the court with her left hand. And as a Notre Dame defender tried to steal the ball near the basket, James used a nifty behind-the-back maneuver to put the ball into her right hand and quickly convert the layup. The basket gave the Wolfpack a 6-point lead as NC State's home crowd roared with approval. The late Pistol Pete Maravich, whose dad, Press Maravich, by the way, was an assistant coach at North Carolina State prior to coming to LSU in the 1960s, would have loved Isaiah James' perfectly timed basketball move. Here's a question. Will the NCAA increase March Madness now from 64 teams to 76 next year? Several news outlets have reported that the annual NCAA March Madness basketball tournament field is considering increasing from 64 teams plus 4 play-in teams to 76 teams next year in 2026. Just wondering, which deserving teams, though, are being left out of that field right now? There are 31 conferences which compete for the NCAA Division I men's and women's basketball titles. And you can expect half or more of the invited teams in this year's March Madness field, men's and women's, to come from just 4 major conferences, the SEC, Big Ten, ACC, and Big 12. As of today, Monday, March 24, 2025, ESPN's famed bracketology is projecting the following number of teams to come from those big 4 conferences. Let's start on the men's side in their division. By the way, there are 352 eligible men's teams competing in Division I this year. In the SEC, ESPN is projecting 12 of the 16 SEC teams are going to make the tournament field. In the Big Ten, 10 of the 18 teams are in. Right now, the Big 12 would have 8 of their 16 teams in the field, and the ACC bringing up the rear with 4 teams out of 18 in their conference. That's 34 of the 68 total teams, or 50% representation from the biggest 4 conferences. That also means, if you flip it around, that there are just 34 openings for the other 284 teams representing 27 other conferences. Now that means that just 7 extra teams from those 27 other conferences are going to make the field. That's not a good probability if you're one of the other conference members. On the women's side, the March Madness tournament has 350 eligible teams in ladies basketball this year. And the projections are that the Big Ten will get 13 of their 18 teams into the field. The SEC will bring 10 of their 16 teams. The ACC gets half of theirs, 9 of their 18. And the Big 12 will get 7 teams out of their 16 in their conference. That adds up to 39 teams out of the 68-team field, or 57.35% coming from just 4 conferences. What that also means, if you flip it around, that there are only 29 openings for the other 27 conferences, which represent the other 282 schools. Yeah, that means that just 2 extra teams from those 27 other conferences might make the women's field. That doesn't sound very fair, does it? If the NCAA's March Madness tournament expands to 76 teams next year, which teams do you think will get those extra spots? And if you guessed the big conferences, you're probably going to be right. Isn't there a better way to do this? Let me give you an example. Today, the McNeese State University men's team is leading the Southland Conference with a sparkling 16-1 conference record and is 25-6 overall. The Cowboys have a 3-game lead over the second-place team, Lamar University, in the conference standings. So what if McNeese, though, should lose to, let's say, 6th-place Northwestern State, which is 12-15 overall today, in the finals of the upcoming Southland Conference basketball tournament? The league's top regular season team, McNeese, will likely be sitting at home watching the March Madness tournament, just like you and I. Meanwhile, a very jubilant squad of Northwestern State Demons will be representing the Southland Conference in the men's March Madness basketball field with a record that hovers around 500 for the year. The Cinderella Story Demons will be matched up against a number 1 seeded team in that opening round of the March Madness tournament, though. There's always a chance they win, but the odds are very much against it. So why even play a regular season slate of games if your basketball conference tournament is going to dictate the only team to receive a bid for the March Madness field? I find that a very interesting issue. If the majority of the 27 small college conferences receive only 1 guaranteed spot into the basketball tournament, can a conference decide not to hold an end-of-season tournament conference championship game and just send the regular season winner to the March Madness field? Let's start with a couple of positive assumptions, though. Number 1 is most of these small conferences do like the fact that these end-of-season tournaments are, yes, very profitable, and secondly, televised nationally, at least the championship game, on ESPN's family of networks or CBS Sports Network. By contrast, wouldn't the Southland Conference have its best chance of actually winning a game in the opening round of the March Madness tournament by sending its dominant regular season men's champion, McNeese, to represent the conference? Well, if you're one of the other 11 teams in the Southland Conference men's basketball tournament, you're going to disagree with my argument there. But I'm not aware of any NCAA rule which requires that the conference must hold an end-of-season basketball tournament in order to determine its lone guaranteed spot in the March Madness field. But as of today, I'm not aware of one conference that's willing to do that. Question. Does America want to see a few more pound puppies from these smaller conferences in the March Madness tournament, or additional mediocre teams from the so-called pedigreed major conferences? Let's take a look at the SEC men's standings today. If ESPN's bracketology projections are correct, 2 of the 12 SEC teams projected to make the March Madness field actually have a losing record within the conference. That's right. Vanderbilt, which is 18-9 overall, is just 6-8 in the SEC. Arkansas, which is 16-11 overall, looks even worse, though, at 5-9 in SEC play. The Big Ten can't laugh because, even though they'll have 10 teams in the March Madness field right now, Nebraska, which is 17-10, sports a conference record of only 7-9 today. Now, personally, I would prefer to watch a 20-plus game regular season league champion, which happens to lose in its postseason conference tournament, participating in the March Madness tournament, rather than watching another marginal team from one of the four major conferences. It'd be fun to see if the opening weekend of the March Madness basketball tournament feature a few more of the upstart smaller conference teams, which posted an outstanding regular season record, getting their chance to compete in the big dance field. Regardless of how this all plays out next year, though, the March Madness national champion must ultimately win at least six straight games in the tournament to take home the big trophy. Whether these new entrants next year come from the biggest conference or the smallest conferences, they're going to be given a very, very microscopic chance of winning it all anyway. I'm Swamp Swami.